Hi there. I'm Brian Moline.
And I'm Lisa Braltz.
And this is The Bandwagon, kind of a new thing we're trying here, talking a little bit of sports, kind of in a what we hope is a little bit of a different way than what you normally hear sports discussed, at least on the airwaves. Yeah, Lisa, let's talk about how this kind of came about. It was just pretty random, really.
Yes. So every so often, I attend news meetings as part of my job here at WILL. And I crashed this meeting with the intent of asking one question and ended up getting involved in a five-minute-long conversation with Brian about sports while everybody else in the newsroom just sat there and listened. And our director of news and public affairs, Scott Cameron, said, "Was anybody recording that? That should be a show, and you guys should call it The Bandwagon." And here we are.
Here we are. Mm-hmm. And the music that you are hearing in the intro has a connection to The Bandwagon. I'll let you explain that, Lisa.
Of course. So the band is called Teenage Fan Club. So for all of you aging indie rockers out there, you've probably heard of Teenage Fan Club. And their hit record was called Bandwagon-esque. And the song that I chose is I Don't Know, which I think sometimes when we are talking about sports, and when I say we, I mean Brian and myself, and also in sports in general, you can feel like you have all the answers. You have statistics, and we watch, and we have the best angles on everything, so we always think we know, but really, we don't know.
No, we don't know. That's part of the beauty of sports, is we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. We know what's supposed to happen a lot of times, but that's why they play the game, so to speak.
Well, and we think we know what happens when we're watching on television because we have the best angle on everything. So mm-hmm. We think we know what happened, but often my husband, who's an official, and we'll talk hopefully at some point about officials and umpires and things like that, he's always like, you know, I got to trust that the guy closest to the play had the best angle.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever people get all bent out of shape about what they perceive to be a bad call, and there are bad calls. There are definitely bad calls. But when people get all bent out of shape, he likes to remind me that the person who was closest might have had a better angle than even the TV camera.
All right, so we'll hopefully discuss that here in a little bit. But we thought it'd be good to start off here because, well, kind of the inspiration for the name of this bandwagon was talking about how, you know, with an area team like the Cubs being involved in the baseball playoffs for the first time in a while,
mm-hmm.
that you have a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak.
Oh, for sure.
And I've noticed that. And although, as we talk here on this Monday morning, the bandwagon might be getting a little lighter as the Cubs lost twice over the weekend to the Mets. They're down 2-0 in that series. But it's always interesting to kind of see how that happens. You know, you've got people who just kind of want to be a part of it, I think. You know, I've been a Cubs fan since I was about 8 years old, so I've gone through lots of ups and downs with the Cubs. But I'm always welcome more people on that bandwagon.
Yeah, and I feel like the Cubs are sort of a special case because they've been trying for so long and there are so many legends and tales of woe and bad luck. I mean, when that guy a few years ago interfered with that foul ball, I mean, just mm-hmm. when just even watching the replays of that again this year, because they've shown it again, have just been painful. And so people, I don't want to say they feel sorry for the Cubs, but they really want to see it happen. Mm-hmm. Although then I wonder, like, will the earth continue to spin on its axis if the Cubs go past this point? So I think you're right. I think in some ways the bandwagon is lightening a little bit. And some people are like, see, I told you this would happen. It was too good to be true. There's no way they're ever going to, you know, get past it. I say let's give them a chance to get to Wrigley Field and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, and that'll be tomorrow night, Tuesday night. They'll have game 3 of that series, so we'll see if the Cubs can get back in it. One thing that you and I talked about briefly in that famous meeting last week was a little bit about TV networks and finding the games on TV, which is becoming more and more of a challenge. And for me, I finally cut the cord on cable TV this year. Just was tired of it. I'd had enough.
So when did you do that? Like earlier this year?
I did that this summer.
Okay.
And for the most part, it's worked pretty well. I've been able to get most of what I wanted. I subscribed to a streaming service called Sling, which has like 20, 25 channels and gave me most of what I wanted, including TBS, which has the National League playoffs, right. And ESPN, which had the wild card game. But it does not have Fox Sports 1,
right,
which is carrying the American League playoffs. So I've not been able to watch really any of that. which has been a bit of a hassle. And that's something, Lisa, like when you and I were growing up, okay, the playoffs and the World Series, they were on network TV. So if you wanted to watch them, you knew where to go. Now it seems like with cable channels and everything else, it's just getting more and more of a challenge.
It's totally more of a challenge. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, do we have Fox Sports 1? Because we also cut the cord probably more like a year ago. And actually, we haven't had cable television for a long time. But we actually started paying for services in the last year, mostly to watch soccer. My family is a massive soccer family, but also to watch other sports, tennis, you know, things like that on our schedules, not necessarily the network schedule, because that on-demand viewing can be really great. You can like binge watch tennis matches if you want to, which is awesome. So, yes, growing up, we were able to watch all of those playoff games. It wasn't hard to find. There were only three, maybe four networks, you know, and the same ones seemed to have it all the time. And also the radio. I have had a hard time finding games on the radio. And I grew up listening to a lot of Minnesota Twins baseball. My dad would always have the games on a Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon. So I grew up listening especially to baseball and occasionally other sports on the radio. And often I like to listen. I just, that rhythm of a baseball game in the background is just sports noise, but particularly baseball, I really enjoy. I've had a hard time finding it on the radio too. And you can stream it online, but I don't always know where to look. And I just feel like, why not make this available in an easy way to as many people as possible? This is America's pastime. And it, to me, I was jokingly calling it TV for paupers. But honestly, I mean, like that over-the-air signal is something still most people can get. And I think the bandwagons would be even heavier if more people felt like they could watch it.
Yeah, and as far as the radio goes, I believe there is a station here in Champaign-Urbana that carries the Cubs games. I believe those are on 95.3 FM. The Cardinals are on 93.5. The signal for 95.3 can be a little bit shaky sometimes. I think that tower's out of Rantoul, so sometimes particularly I've noticed when I get up in the northern part of town for some reason, it seems to break up a little bit. But I think that's available. One thing that I've been able to download is the Major League Baseball At Bat app, and I think they have a service there. I think it's for $20 a year. You can get all of the Major League Baseball radio broadcasts. So have to pay a little bit for it, but for me at least, being a big baseball guy, I found that it's worth having. But there is something about, you know, just being able to turn on the radio and, you know, skim around until you find the game
on the
air.
Cranky old me just wants it on AM. I don't want it to sound awesome. I definitely am veering into get off my lawn territory for sure. I just want to be able to scan the, like, twirl the dial and find the AM spot where you've got grizzled veteran color commentary and guys who get really excited when the ball goes over the fence. You know, things have changed, and for the most part, I embrace that. But sometimes I'm totally bewildered by the options or, you know, looking online for things. It's like, oh, who cares? You know?
Yeah, and I think the tough part about that is, and I've managed to, hopefully no one is listening, but I've managed to skirt Major League Baseball's blackout rules. I won't explain in detail how I've gone about doing that, but I've been able to do that. So when I cut the cord to cable this year, I was still able to get the Cubs games because I subscribed to MLB TV, you know, pay a flat fee, which was about $100 for the season to get all the games. And by getting around the blackout rules, I've been able to watch the Cubs despite not having cable. Which was one of the reasons I went ahead and did it, because I wasn't going to do it if I wasn't going to be able to watch the Cubs. That's kind of my thing. That's
right.
You know, like your household is a soccer household.
Exactly.
My household's a baseball household.
Exactly.
So that was definitely one of the deciding factors in finally cutting the cord. But Major League Baseball's blackout rules are completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go nuts, look at what the rules are for the state of Iowa, for instance. If you're in the state of Iowa, you are technically in the broadcast territory for the Chicago Cubs, the Chicago White Sox, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Minnesota Twins, and the Kansas City Royals. Regardless of the fact that you probably can't get most of those games on your cable system, even if you wanted to, you might be able to get the Cubs, you might be able to get the Cardinals possibly, but you are in the blackout rules for 6 different Major League Baseball teams. So yeah.
Oh, Iowa.
Yeah, crazy Iowa.
Also, related to all of this, we've talked a little bit about this before. So if I can't find the game that I want to watch, a lot of times I will follow it on Twitter and mm-hmm. still get a really good idea of what's going on. And even if I didn't see the awesome home run or the beautiful catch or the amazing strikeout, somebody within 60 seconds will have posted a Vine video or something mm-hmm. of that moment. And I'm able to sort of follow along. Now, is it the same as sitting there and watching? No. But do I have to deal with commercials? No. Do I, you know, there's a lot of things I don't have to deal with when I've got that second screen going. Or if I'm doing something else, there's another game on. I lost the coin flip about the Cubs and we're watching MLS soccer instead. Mm-hmm. I'm able to follow the games on Twitter. And we talked a little bit about the use of the second screen and its place. Not just, I think, to me, it's fascinating that people will have two, and sometimes, you know, like they'll have the TV or however they're watching the game. They'll have social media open, and then they might even have another app open on a different device while these games are going on. It's not necessarily for fantasy sports purposes. It's just like trying to be part of the conversation that's happening about the game in real time. And it's fascinating to me now how I feel like that has changed a lot of how people talk about sports is the availability of secondary and tertiary screens.
Yeah, and really where I got started doing that was when I was in my previous life hosting post-game call-in shows. That's something I would do during the game is I would be on Twitter and kind of posting some thoughts about what was going on during the game while I had it on in the studio on TV and was listening to the radio broadcast, mostly of you know, Illini sports. And then that would kind of give me the chatter I would see on social media then gave me some possible ideas for topics on the post-game show after the game. So that's kind of how I got started doing it. And now it's rare for me not to have my Twitter feed open while I'm watching a game. Usually it's on my phone and I'm kind of, you know, in and out with it a little bit. But I'll have the Twitter feed open. And like you, if, for instance, the American League playoffs, which I haven't been able to watch much of, I'll have that open while I'm watching something else so I can at least see what's going on and follow kind of the storylines of the game.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, like that crazy Texas-Toronto game that I was somewhere else, so I wasn't able to watch that game. But you could see on Twitter, like, you know, my Twitter feed, not that I follow a lot of people who follow baseball, but this time of year, more people just get interested in baseball. And I just kept seeing, oh, my God, what just happened? Oh, for sure, a triple play will end this inning. I'm like, what the heck happened? And then the next day, my husband, I just mentioned it to him, like, I'm still trying to figure out what happened in that game. And he found a place online that had isolated just that inning, 19 minutes, just of the inning, from probably ganked from television somehow. And so I could watch the whole thing, just that inning. I could see everything that happened. I didn't see it in the context of the entire game, but I was able to at least see it, you know, again, you know, that social media web archival aspect is really important. The other thing I wanted to mention is just the live tweeting of the games that sometimes people do where they're actually watching the game to tweet out the activities, not offer their own commentary or judgments on what's happening, but just, you know, like the actual play-by-play. It's sort mm-hmm. of a substitute for play-by-play. And I will say this comes in really handy for a couple of reasons at a level you might not think. So last spring, I would live tweet my daughter's high school soccer games. Mm-hmm. with a hashtag that I would develop for the games so that parents who weren't able to be at the games could find out what happened. And so the girls could, on the bus ride back or once they went home for the night, could see what happened also in the game. Because sometimes when you're playing, you don't recognize or remember everything that happened. And they loved it. Even if they don't use Twitter often themselves, you know, they all had Twitter accounts. You know, these are teenagers who don't really use Twitter very much. They were really happy to have this record mm-hmm. of matches. So I think there's a lot of really unique ways to use social media. It doesn't have to be like, let's jump in on the conversation of what's happening with Arrieta's pitching. But it can also be like, here's what happened at the, you know, Urbana Park District game, Grandpa, you know, or whatever. So people can access those games and talk about them. And even the players, you know, the girls would often tweet back and be like, yeah, and that was an awesome pass from Carmen or whatever. And so it was just a really good way to sort of relive the games for the girls, but also to broadcast the games for other people.
And I think another way that it can be useful, at least it is to me, is that we all complain from time to time about the TV commentators and the insider lack thereof that they're bringing to the broadcast. And that just gives you some more voices. You know, I follow, for instance, with the Cubs, I follow a lot of the different reporters who are covering the team. So, you know, a play that the play-by-play announcers might see one way, the beat writers who are covering the team might have a little bit different perspective on it. Or you might have, say, a national baseball writer who's at the game. He might have a little bit different take on it that's not necessarily Cubs-centric, but can also add a little different insight to it. So I think you just get a little bit more depth sometimes if you're following along the social media while you're watching the game.
And it makes me wonder, like, what did we do before that? Or, if people aren't following along on social media, are they missing things? Even if they're watching the news, a lot of times you'll see tweets or an ESPN, I think, actually probably is one of the best users of social media of any TV network, not just sports, but any network. They hopped on that bandwagon early and have stayed on, and all of their on-air personalities have Twitter accounts, and they're very, very active on social media, and they crowdsource information. So I wonder sometimes if people who don't use social media in this way feel like they're missing something when they're watching ESPN or they're watching even the news. Do they feel like they're missing some sort of context because some hashtag blew up for 15 minutes in the middle of some game? I feel like the conversations are going to continue to develop as social media becomes more integrated with traditional media. So one thing that I saw on social media today that's sports related, sort of shift the topic away from participating in game, but just using it for news, is We've also talked a little bit about high school football and football in general, and football numbers maybe decreasing at the high school level. And I just read this morning about another young person who passed away, I believe, in Texas over the weekend after being injured in a game. That makes six young men who have passed away since September at the high school level. What do you think? I mean, now, it could be that I'm just much more hyper aware of it this year because it's become part of the larger conversation about football. But I feel like six is a lot. One is a lot. Never mind other types of career ending injuries. You know, these are deaths. These are young people who are dying. And I just wonder too, you know, relative to other sports, I've seen concussions happen in soccer games. I've seen concussion. It can happen in any sport. You know, something can happen and you can hit the ground the wrong way or run into another player. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, where are we at with this?
I can tell you that should I at some point have kids in the future, they will not be playing football. That's not necessarily 100% my decision. My wife feels adamantly about that. I'd be a little more open to it, but I totally respect her wishes on that. And I don't think that she's alone. I think there are a lot of parents who are starting to feel the same way. Is the risk of permanent head trauma, or in extreme cases, as you mentioned, even death, is it worth playing a sport? And I think more and more people are coming to the conclusion that it's not. I don't think it's a trend that's going away. I think, of course, they're trying to come up with more safety measures. But I think just because of the very nature of football, I mean, it's a sport that's based on violent collisions. That's the whole basis of it, the whole blocking and tackling aspect of football. It's a sport that's been based on violent collisions for more than a century, and I don't know if there are permanent answers to change that.
Well, I feel like the more they try to protect the players, like with padding or helmets or whatever, the harder they're going to hit. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, we have this like robo suit that we're wearing now, and now we can hit each other as hard as we can, and obviously that's not. And I don't know what kind of situations financially these high school teams were in. Could they afford the super cool helmets with the sensors in them, or, you know, the extra fancy padding? I'm not even sure what is standard. I'm speaking here as a person who has never had a child play football. I don't know. But I have lots of friends whose boys still play, and who are excited for their boys to play. And so there's no judgment there, but I just wonder if over time, as more information comes out, there's that movie coming out with Will Smith, based on it called Concussion, I think.
Yeah.
You know, that is probably going to shed a little more light. So it's sort of like the biopic version maybe of the Frontline special that we had last year. So I'm curious to know what will happen with high school football in the next 5 years. I still think football, I mean, you just see how many people are watching games on Sunday and college football on Saturday. And, you know, everybody, all anybody could talk about was the Michigan State ending, which I did not see. You know, so football is still a huge part of American culture. And I'm curious to see not just what it will look like in high school, but as those, if those numbers continue to decline, what it's going to look like in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that going to do to college programs? How, you know, and who's going to be playing, you know, and it's expensive to play football. So who's playing now? And you know, maybe kids who are getting out of it are going to other sports. I mean, I have to assume that they are. You know, and we can talk maybe another time about the expense of club sports and and park district and versus park district sports and elite athletes. Football teams are also huge. There's a lot of student athletes on those teams at the college level and then pro teams too. So I'm curious to know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out in terms of numbers of people playing versus not playing and choosing to go into other sports. And will that make soccer more popular in this country? I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't score enough, apparently.
Yeah,
so.
I guess that's always been the knock on soccer, so to speak. But, yeah, we can talk about that a little bit more maybe in a future episode. We've already talked for about 20 minutes here today.
Well, that's cool. And is there anything else that we want to talk about? I mean, we can mention the University of Illinois soccer team, the women's soccer team. Is about, what, two-thirds of the way through their season?
I think there's 2 weeks of the regular season to go.
Oh, okay, so they're further. See, I'm just completely out of it. So one thing that surprised me, though, is it seems like their rock and roll superstar, Janelle Flaws, has kind of cooled. I mean, she's broken all the records, and she sits atop the U of I soccer pile, just like, you know, she's wearing the crown for everything. But she seems to have cooled off in the last few games, and I haven't been able to watch or get to any games. But it makes me wonder if even kids at the park district level now review tape. They look at tape. Mm-hmm. They've got parents filming games, and I mean, even in my own household at the park district level, we would a father would video the games and give us a disc, and I think it actually did help my daughter and her friend. They would review. They would be like in sixth grade reviewing tape. So anyway, I just wonder if the scouting is really good on her, and other teams are able to better neutralize her. Now I've seen her, and sometimes she just gets loose, and then you just want to get out of the way. I mean, she's got a rocket for a foot. But I'm wondering what will happen if, you know, she was one of those players where I thought, well, maybe she'll go on to, you know, she'll get a cap or two for some sort of U.S. women's national team. But now I don't know.
Yeah. And I just was reading today, Scott Ritchie from the News Gazette, he covers the soccer team and the volleyball team for that matter. He's a busy guy in the fall. But he was writing about yesterday's game, and he alluded to something I hadn't heard about. He said that the Illini have become more balanced on offense in part because Flaws is dealing with her ailing feet. So I don't know, probably some kind of a nagging injury there for Janelle, it looks like. But
both feet implies both feet, too.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Interesting. And she's had knee problems. I mean, that's why, you know, she would get injured and then redshirt for a year. And she's done that twice, I think. So, so that's interesting that now her feet are involved.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like, you know how when you get injured, your body tends to compensate, or, you know, you favor one leg over the other. I just wonder if that is part of it, too, or if it's both feet, I just feel like maybe she's off balance. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm talking completely out of school here. I have no idea.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, she's able to stay on the field for Illinois. She's obviously their best offensive player. By the way, it was Carl Marbury yesterday who scored two of their three goals.
Right.
Sophomore forward. And looked like Nebraska was playing kind of an interesting defensive strategy where they had their players really tightly compacted. Illinois was able to play the ball over the top to Marbury a few times. She's about 5'10", so got the ball to her in the box. She was able to head in a couple of goals.
Do you feel like Illinois women's soccer, I mean, I feel like we've been on the verge. We've been waiting since the Ella Mazur years, really. So this would be 10, 12 years ago now. Like, you know, we have this totally awesome coach and Janet Rayfield. You know, she scouts for the U.S. Women's National Team. She's in the upper echelons. She's been with the team for years. But it seems like they have, I don't know if it's mental, physically, they don't seem to get really outplayed in games. It's just stuff happens. What do you think? You know, especially with the younger players that are coming on, I think a lot of attention in the preseason was focused on Janelle Flaws, and she'll be graduating and moving on. So I'm curious if there are some players who are going to be able to step in and fill that gap, but also players who are going to be able to add more on a certain level and maybe be able to push them over the hump.
Yeah, I don't know. Illinois has been in kind of that, you know, that good program for a long time. I think under Janet Rayfield, they made the Elite Eight once back in 04, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I think they've made the Sweet 16 three other times under Janet, which I think the last time was, I think, 2 years ago, Vanessa DiBernardo's senior year, I believe was. They made the Sweet 16. And the what if I kept asking myself was, what if DiBernardo and Flaws had been healthy together for most of their careers? Because they really were never healthy and on the field together. By the time Flaws came back from her second ACL reconstruction, DiBernardo was a senior, and then she got banged up her senior year.
That's right.
Just when Flaws was coming on. And she came back and played at the end of that year, but she was not 100%. DiBernardo wasn't. So I kept asking myself, man, what if those two could have been healthy and on the field at the same time? Then I think you might have been able to see Illinois really take that next jump, maybe get to a Final Four.
Yeah, and you know, you're sitting here talking and reminding me of these injuries, and particularly with Vanessa, who is not a super big, tall person, very strong and powerful, but not, I mean, you'd see her get dropped in these games and she would just lay there and you'd be like, oh my God, I hope she's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a young woman who's maybe 5'4", 5'5", and can't weigh much more than 100 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean, she's just very slight.
Exactly. And so that makes, and then, you know, Janelle Flaws having her, now she's practically bionic in the knees, or at least one knee. I can't remember if it's one or both knees. But so then I start thinking about injuries and what happens in your life after college or if you go pro. I think of Ella Mazur, who just had so many. She played Urbana Park District Soccer. Then she played for Urbana High School. We lived across the street from Urbana High School when she was playing for Urbana High School. Then she walked on to the University of Illinois team and was like a total rock star there, and then moved into the pros. And I think she got one or two caps for the women's national team in international play.
I think so.
Pretty sure. So, and she just always worked so hard. But she kind of had this sort of fearless, like, you know, get it kind of attitude, which also resulted in her breaking her nose. She's worn giant club style casts, you know, like and she's retired.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if she cited injuries as a reason, but you have to feel like that certainly shortened her career. And it's the same in with men playing sports as well. Probably more so because they're playing games like football, which are a lot harder on the body. But I just think of, you know, I'm complaining about my knees and feet hurting at my age, and these are people who've got a long time ahead of them where they're going to be dealing with the aftermath of their injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. Soccer, just one of the sports where I think athletes, after they retire, certainly there'll be aches and pains for them to deal with. Well,
yep.
I think, Lisa, we should probably wrap up this inaugural edition of the Bandwagon here.
All right.
If people have any topics they want to talk about, by all means, want us to talk about, give us a shout. You can find me, B. Moline, at illinois.edu.
I'm at Braltz@illinois.edu, or you can find me at Lisa Braltz on Twitter, and you can drop us a line and ask us to cover whatever. Because like our theme song says, I don't know. I just like sports. I'm not like a super fan or an expert really on anything. I know them. I live with officials and players, and I played sports myself back in the dark ages of the 80s. And I still love sports. But I think the whole idea here is to start conversations about sports for real people outside of the super fandom. There's nothing wrong with super fandom. And if you are a super fan, please feel free to jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. If we say something that you think is completely wrong or whatever, by all means.
Oh, for sure.
Let us know.
I expect that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it. Anytime you talk about sports, you're going to get lots of opinions. That's what we hope for here. But anyway, this has been The Bandwagon. I'm Brian Moline.
And I'm Lisa Braltz.
Thanks for listening.